Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is not Farhad, it's Dash. Just kidding, everybody. Had to make sure that you're paying attention. Welcome to episode 226 of the Turin Giants podcast. I am here, an emergency podcast or a last minute podcast. You know, people's schedules got a little bit discombobulated, so El Jefe asked if we could step in and do a quick post to swallow recap. I am joined by the Zackiest of Zacky boys. Zacky, how are you?
How we doing, man?
I'm sore. That's all I'm going to open up with. I'm sore. Just because I decided to channel in my inner prime left wing backness over the night, and my everything is sore. So moral of the story, kids, don't get old because it sucks.
Yeah. I can't argue with you that one, man. It does suck. But hey, you know what? It's not going to stop me from doing it. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to bust my ass tonight. And tomorrow I'm going to wake up feeling like shit, and I'm going to love it. I'm going to hate it. I'm going to love hate it.
I'm going to complete my 3-4 passes, and I'm going to use it as my pickup line to the chicks at the bar. Let's go. Dude, nothing screams beer league more than that.
Dude, there was when we played indoor before the place that we used to play at shut down, they had a bar in the building.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so sick because like we would immediately like just hop off the field and be like, oh, let's go grab a beer. And it was chill. Like we would all my co-ed team would just like grab some seats and like chill out and just talk shit and like have a drink or two and then go home. It was awesome. And then like, you know, when the pandemic happened, everything kind of went away. And then when we came back, they started to kind of bring it back, but then it closed. And when it closed the bar on the inside, because it was run by a different proprietor who was obviously underneath like the umbrella of this building, when that happened, it was kind of like the writing on the wall. I was like, something's not right here. And then he hit us with the email. Yeah, it's been sold. Sorry, y'all. And it was like, ow.
It's been sold to forever remain vacant, as most warehouses go.
It actually just became like a storage center. I'm like, great. There's like 15 more, like 15 of those, like built in less like 2 years. Like all of a sudden, everybody just decided to downsize when the market got crazy, and they were like, oh, I'll just buy a house when the market, you know, chills out again. And they so shoved all their shit in storage. And I'm like, yeah, great, but now I don't got no place to go play indoor soccer. Now I got to go 45 minutes out of my way.
I know it sucks. It's kind of like the same thing here where I'm at too, because it's like the one that's like right around the corner from my house is like it's not even like turf, dude. It's like carpet.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Where you get like there's no, I mean, the good news is you don't wear cleats, so you don't have to worry about an Achilles rupture on turf.
You wear flat shoes.
Yep, you wear the flats, so at least you have some give. But dude, if you fall on that sucker going at pace, holy hell, I feel bad for whatever bare skin touches that bad boy.
Yeah, you're gonna get rug burn, and you're gonna get, I mean, and it's usually just concrete slab right underneath it, so
yep,
like you're gonna feel it in your bones the next day.
Oh yeah, that's why, like, for example, if I'm ever at that facility, I tell people, like, look, man, I'm not playing keeper. I sprained my elbow. I can't do this. I'm not about to risk it all.
Don't blame you at all, man. Absolutely.
But you know, that's the trend, though. It's kind of interesting, right? Because, like, either people are buying warehouses and converting them into storage facilities, or people buying warehouses and converting them into indoor facilities for footy. Because, like, I think over the past, like, 2 or 3 years, I've seen maybe, like, 6 or 7 new indoor soccer facilities open up in Michigan. Damn. The only issue for me is that it's all like 30 to 45 minutes away. And it's like,
right.
Because, you know, old people logistics, guys, because it's like, you know, you're going for about 60 to about 90 minutes, but and then your drive time is about an hour. So you're kind of sitting there and you're just kind of like, and if you can only imagine if I had kids, that would just like put the writing on the wall, like early retirement.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we definitely have had like players like have to drop out because like, it's not working right with my schedule. Got kids, yada, yada. And I'm just like, that's why I'm a bachelor.
I was going to say, moral of the story, be a bachelor. Channel your inner Travis Kelce, right?
No. Yeah. Go
ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead. I was saying, I don't have the gumption to like make a pass at like a celebrity who just happens to come watch my game. But then again, I'm not Travis Kelce, so.
Dude, I'm still appalled by the fact that his mom was with Taylor Swift, like in the box. I thought that was hilarious. Like
that is pretty,
you know, normally I don't care, but I just like, I was looking at it and I'm just like, I kind of like honestly just wanted to tip my cap to him. I was like, Travis, you do you, man.
Oh yeah. Hey, man, all power to him. And if his mom is going to be his wingman at this point,
hell yeah. Hell yeah. And the thing is, like, he scores like a sweet touchdown. Taylor's like banging on the glass, and Travis's mom is just like, like, you know, just the slow clap.
That's my boy.
So, man, you know, the funny thing, and we'll get into it. We gotta prime you guys a little bit, because this isn't going to be the happiest of shows, but we also got to leave you smiling a little bit. But the thing that I found funny about Travis hitting on Taylor Swift was, like, dude gave her a friendship bracelet at her Eras tour with his cell phone number on it.
That
gave her that. Right?
That's what all the tweets have been.
That's what it is. Huh? That's what it is. My dude shot his shot with a bracelet, and now she's watching his games.
I think that's a very clever way, and it's also very non-invasive, because it's like, hey, if you ever want to talk, here it is. But like, if not, here's just like a nice bracelet, like as a gesture of kindness I made for you, you know.
And it gets better, Zach, because here's the conversation that they actually had when he was handing the bracelet over. He's like, hey, look, I saw you rock Arrowhead during your Eras tour. How about you come and see me rock my stadium during the football season? Here's my number. And the thing is like, so he talks about it on his podcast with his older brother, Jason Kelce. It's called The Heights. Definitely recommend you listen to that. He talks about it. He's like, hey, man, I just took my shot and I left the ball on her court. Whether or not she wants to come up and drain that three or go to a different court, that's on her. I'm like,
that's all you can do. That's all you can do.
That's fair, man. Yeah. Like, respect. Straight respect, man.
Absolutely.
So, wow. Awkward pause, because now I have to get to the real nitty gritty stuff.
Yeah.
The shots that we wish we took.
Yeah, right.
So
the shots that we did not take.
The rainy day in the Mape ends quite ugly. 4-2 for Sassuolo against Juve. First loss of the season. I'm kind of noticing a trend this season, and it's not what most people think, right? Someone's probably thinking Dash is going to say something about Allegri or probably pick a fit with Dusan. No, actually not. Apparently, Juve's kryptonite this season is playing in the rain. Bologna was a downpour. This Sassuolo game was a downpour. And for some reason, we cannot play in a damn downpour. That is ridiculous.
You know, it's funny. I was literally having a conversation with Farhad, saying, like, yo, usually, like, if you're a betting man, like, when it rains, it's usually like a 1-1. 0-1, because like the ball gets slippery and yep, not in this case. Shut me the fuck up, because we allowed 4. Now I know it was like the wind was really whipping, but like, boy, oh boy, 4. And I know, like, I would say like 2 with an asterisk, but you know,
yeah,
they have 4 for a reason.
They did. Part of me wants to say, like, oh man, I can't even say it without dying. Ugh. But I want to say, like, obviously you could say that 2 are with an asterisk, but I also think the Domenico Berardi goal, even though he did a great finish, the buildup to it was an asterisk, because it was horrible coverage, horrible pass. It was just, I think the thing is what kind of elaborated me on that one, or kind of blew my mind on it. And I'll get some still images. I found a way that we can show some kind of footage without getting in trouble, so you guys are in for a treat. But the thing is like, what really kind of baffled me from that second goal, or that go-ahead goal with Domenico Berardi, was it was just, I think our left side was like, okay, great, we're pushing forward, the ball is going, and then Gatti kind of like yeets that pass like atrociously bad. So then, like, you ever see the Pikachu face where they're like the Pikachu meme where the Pikachu shock? That was like Danilo and Bremer the entire time that play
happened.
Yeah,
they're like, wait, huh?
Because like, you know what? I'll pull up the still for you guys, but it was one of those things where everybody was like, what the hell just happened? So, all right, here we go. Let's do this, because folks that are watching on the Spotify, I got you. So we're looking at it. So this is not obviously the play in question here. So this is the bad play by Gatti right here, in theory. Oops. So it's like right here, and then they intercept the ball, and then it's like, well, everyone's kind of, are you? Oh shoot, I forgot to share my screen. Damn it! I did that again.
I got you.
I am an absolute, absolute flop at this.
Nah,
all right. So essentially, this is the turnover that Gatsi created. Everybody's kind of like, all right, so already in forward momentum. Locatelli's like, wait, what? And then McKennie's kind of like, bruh, like I'm wide open to the right. With like McKennie's hand motion right there is probably the best because he has his hands open like a dude that would be in a pickup game where he's like, seriously? Like, come on now. Yep. So, and then we look at this here, move a little bit. So again, everybody's a little bit discombobulated. I think that's Moretti that's been turned into a praying guy right there real quick. He's just praying for his misplacement there. So Bremer's kind of in what I like to say no man's land here because you're a little bit too far off from here. So essentially he's going to be able to get the ball off this player over here, which is Pinamonte.
Right.
So you're assuming it's going to Pinamonte off rip. But then what makes this a little bit more interesting is, oh gosh, YouTube's blurriness. So if I can do this. Bear with me, guys. YouTube sucks. So here's the issue, right? So he lays the ball off for Domenico right here. And then look at where your defenders are.
Right.
So they're way too far off, especially, you know, be that as is may, that Berardi did miss an open net against North Macedonia, but he didn't miss this one. But the thing is with this play here, it's just like you have that much gap, that much space. It's just absolutely atrocious, man. Defending wise, everyone was just kind of like caught out and just lost it and, you know, becomes bottom corner shot and, you know, good night, Irene.
Right.
But it's a tough game, man, because the thing is like tactically, I think we were good. Like I didn't see an issue with Allegri's setup. The only issue I have, and I think a lot of people have it, is why is Kostic still starting?
Right. Yeah. And there was a lot of discourse online that was kind of like, bro, what service is he providing right now for what we're attempting to do?
Yep. And the thing is like, my issue was like, even like, for example, Juve was trying to force it through Kostic's side to get him to create an attack on the edge, but it just wasn't happening. There was a lot of instances where McKennie was wide open and they're automatically looking towards the left.
Right.
Like automatically there's no ifs, ands, or buts. And that was the thing that really kind of got on my nerves about it, because it was like, why are we forcing something in a direction that isn't working? Because like, for example, Kostic, even the announcers, and like, I'm not saying that Paramount Plus's commentators are the smartest guys in the world, but like they were saying something that made sense, right? They're like, Kostic flat-footed again. Like the amount of times I was hearing Kostic and flat-footed in the same sentence is extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of plays where like he lost his footing and I was just like seriously?
Right.
And like, and the thing is like, out of all those players there in that first half, the one that was really pulling the offense forward was McKennie.
Right. That's
like
true.
It was McKennie again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Rabiot, McKennie essentially cuts in through the right, slides a defender out with him, and then lays the ball up for Rabiot, who absolutely just shanks it left. And that was like in the...
I'm seeing... So I'm on FotMob, and I'm seeing Rabiot had a 7.3. Boy, I don't think so. I think he had kind of a howler of a game.
Yeah. I have a hard time believing like that, just there with just full consciousness. Like, oh, yeah. Because like those scores make no sense, right? Like McKennie was rated a 6.5. How?
Yeah, he was one of the more productive members out there.
Exactly. And the thing is like I don't understand that. And it's like I pull and you know what? Let's share it because we're also doing the video too. So looking at Rabiot and I remembered to share it this time. So bear with me, guys. I'm being producer Jamie at the same time. But like we look at Rabiot, so 7.3, three total shots, one chance created, expected goals of 0.2. I think maybe that's why they rated him highly, was because of his accurate passes. But like, since when does Rabiot do any kind of pass outside of a layoff?
Right.
So mean, it's like
just, they did say two accurate long balls in the attack, won 50% of his duels. Still, the eye test was telling me something different because he seemed totally ineffective, especially with regard to like when he was getting like a couple of opportunities close to goal and he just made a mess of it. Again, yeah, this is just eye test stuff, you know.
I don't disagree with you on it, but it was just really interesting, right? So, and then if I go a little bit further down here and we look at it, so 57% possession, 400 passes to their 278, big chances two, big misses two. So clearly we weren't outplayed, right? It was just not one of those things where it just wasn't their night.
No,
you look at it, two big chances missed. You make those two big chances, it's 4-4. Easy. Right.
Yeah. Easy. And maybe some of the, maybe, you know, if we take those two big chances and we score and we have four, maybe the other things don't happen. Maybe there aren't lapses. Maybe there aren't, you know, there's a little bit more, there's less pressure to do certain things or maybe attempt certain things because we're down, we're on the back foot, et cetera, whatever you might say. Because the game might not play out like that. You know, if, you know, Rabiot hits that first open shot that he like shanks horrible, or at least like challenges goalkeeper again, like little moments could like transform a game, the feel of a game, right? The momentum of a game, the intangible stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, it was just, no. Yeah, go ahead.
No, no, no. Go for it. Go for it. Finish your thought.
I was going to say, you know, basically what I saw was that there was a team that showed up to play and there was another team that three quarters of them did not show up. There were just, it was so many, it was just mental lapses, man. Like I like touch was bad. I don't know. I don't know if like the rain really bothered them. I know the weather wasn't ideal, but like they're fucking professionals. You know what I mean? Like, they did not perform well. They looked off their game. Like almost like they were on that, like a hangover of that Lazio victory and like didn't show up. Now, not all of them, but like a lot of them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of them, to be honest with you, outside of maybe one or two guys, it was a good chunk of them that just was not, I thought was not up to par. I mean, yeah, like in all honesty, like a 1.16 to a 1.60, it's fairly even, but it's just like we look at these again, like, and I think this is kind of the perfect way to go into the champ and chump of the game per se, but obviously I think the champ is Chiesa for it. I think he's the main champ of the champ of the game for me, him and McKennie a close second. I think the one thing is obviously, I think I'm going to have to throw Tech under the bus on this one as like the chump of the match, because it's like rainy conditions. You're an experienced veteran goalkeeper. His first goal, if you look at it, they broke it down. So if you guys hear, I'll, make myself a wee bit bigger so you can see me explain this to you. But like as a goalkeeper, you don't do this when it's slippery conditions, when you're parrying a ball. This is the hand motions at the angle that he did it as. You go like this. That's goalkeeping 101.
Right. Like almost like he. And now I don't know if, again, this, but this just comes down to like mental sharpness. Like, was he just not expecting Larian to fire a rocket that hard? Because I mean, we know Arantha can fucking hit the ball. Like, you got to be ready. Like, you know, I, that's where like just one of those things where it's like mental lapses. Like, you just didn't close your fist.
Yeah.
Just like punch, like, even if it's coming at you fast, punch. You know?
No, 100%. Because even like, for example, even with the even with that third goal that essentially came off of, well, essentially he set up Pinamonte. He gave him the layup for it. I just was like, you're an experienced goalkeeper. Like, how do you not know where to move the ball or even redirect it from a shot? Like, if you're an experienced defender, when a loose ball is coming at you, when you're in the box, what are you with your head? What naturally do you do? You head it away from danger. You head it away from something that can potentially happen. For me, I don't understand how Chesney lost sight of Pinamonte or even just decides to play it to him. Because this, to me, reminds me of Chesney versus Udinese, where Chesney had, like, just some of the most boneheaded mistakes I've ever seen.
And when I go back and I think about certain performances in the past, I can't remember which game it was last year, but he had a howler last year. And last season, it always seems there's one. And I'm sure there's a listener who can go back and will probably be able to tell me which one it was. But there always just seems like one game where Tech is just bad. Like, not bad, bad. He's usually extremely consistent until he's, like, not. And when he's not, it's pretty atrocious. And then he usually rebounds and does okay for the rest of the year. But hopefully this is just that one that he had today, because for that game, because he just... Yeah, like you said, he made mistakes that a goalkeeper of his supposed caliber and his experience level should not be making.
Yeah. And like the thing is like with Gatti, like I don't blame that own goal on Gatti. As unpopular as that opinion is, I really don't, because the reason why I say that is Tech, first of all,
should never make that pass.
Nope. Never make that pass.
As soon as he made the pass, I said, nope, that's not good. Nope.
So, like, and the thing is like, Tech makes that pass, and then he's just kind of, like, there. Like, he's still in the position that he was in.
Right.
So it's like...
And there's clearly pressure.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Well, and the thing is like, you can see that Gatti had someone on him. Like, there was somebody legitimately on him prior to even making that pass. So it's like, how do you, I don't understand that. Like, what's the thought process there?
Right. That's, again, mental lapses. Like, maybe the thought process just wasn't there. He, like, wasn't thinking it through, because that's like, even, you know, that's like rookie mistake 101, given where the line is and where the offensive line is and where they're coming from, you know, where the attacking players are relative to our defenders. You're catching Gatti with who's like basically half turned towards the goal in a blustery, rainy day. You're just with pressure bearing down on him. You're just asking for a disaster. Now, it's a hell of a I can't lie, it's a hell of a gap. Like, he puts it the one place you really aren't supposed to at all, but in fact it's almost kind of impressive that he did. But that's the problem, is that he should have never received that pass in the first place, because Tech should have recognized that and just killed it long. Just go long.
I know. And it's like, it's ironic, because like Gatti actually had a better finish than a lot of our strikers outside Chiesa this whole game. So,
yeah,
I thought that was ironic. But yeah, it's just, to me, it's like one of those things where it's just like, okay, Tech, you're trying to take a goal kick to force, or you're trying to take the free kick in an awkward position to try to force the game forward. But then you don't send it to Keane or Milik. You send it to Gatti.
Right.
So it's like, come on. Do better.
Yeah. It was one of those games where, like, we made so many boneheaded mistakes, like simple mistakes. Like, I can't help but just, like, kind of laugh at it, you know? Yeah. Just like this is, it's because it's like so, like, I'm dumbfounded in a way, but like, it's just one of the, like, again, everybody has a game like this. You hope it's not this bad, but like, everybody has a game where it's just like, you hope that it's not all of your players or most of your players all having it on the same day. But that was just kind of like what it was. It was just like kind of like this calamitous sort of event after like the first like 20 minutes of the game. It was just like calamity outside of like Chiesa, like trying to keep it all together. It was just like 70 minutes of calamity. And it was just like, that's what day it was. Like, I can't even be upset. Like, I mean, I am, but like, I'm not going to go, you know, I was at work. So I'm like watching, like, because work was slow. So I'm like watching, you know, kind of pacing behind the counter or whatever. I'm not going to go like storm out the back and, you know, have a, you know, pitch a fit and curse my head off or whatever. It was just like one of those things where I'm just like shaking my head, like,
It's that game.
Dude, oh my goodness. Like, I my entire Saturday, I was just sitting there, like, I was just dumbfounded. Like the thing is, like I was pissed during the Champions League final loss against Real Madrid. I wasn't pissed after this one. Like, and fine, people call me out. I don't give a shit. But, like, I just had one of those things on Saturday, like Saturday evening, Zach, where I was just kind of like shaking my head and I'm like, I can't believe this is what I just saw. Like, yeah. Like I thought it was comical. Like, I was like, oh my God. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh my God, Juve's standard's so low. Oh my goodness, we're out, blah, blah, blah. Because if you look at the Serie A stats for expected, I think it's expected league placement right now and actual, the only teams that are overperforming is Milan, Inter, and Lecce, right? And all three of them are respectively above us. But
is overperforming as well.
Are they? Are they equal with us on points?
They are equal with us, but they're overperforming given where they're supposed. They are.
Yeah, to- I gotcha. I gotcha. Yeah. So like, I found it kind of ironic, right? Because like, everyone's like freaking out and like, you know, the plot is lost and all of this and yada yada yada, and it's like, we're kind of right where we're supposed to be.
Right.
Like, I mean, Inter obviously outperformed, but even then, like on the thing, they were originally expected to be maybe a point or two ahead of us, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't understand a lot of the, you know, end of the world. It's, you know, end of this, end of days, blah, blah, blah. Like, here's the funny thing, right? Cause you know, I'm going to do a parallel to the NFL, right? I follow the Detroit Lions. We took a nasty loss against the Seattle Seahawks the previous week, and I was pissed about that. That game was the equivalent of the Sassuolo game to me because we gave them 14 points for fun. Then the week after, because that was, you know, and you need games like this, right? You need games that will kick you in the ass because, like you said, I think everybody was a little bit running high over the Lazio game that, you know, we took away Sarri's balls. And then, you know, you needed a game where, and the thing is, as you could tell, right, a lot of the players weren't really going into the challenges against Sassuolo with intensity. There wasn't just that vigor on the field.
Right.
I think they were kind of, because Sassuolo's positioning on the table, they were like 17th at the time. So they're kind of like, oh, this is a cakewalk. Kind of like with Empoli, right? Yeah, so relax. Empoli last season.
Yeah.
So it's these guys need to, my thing is these guys need to learn how to relax, right? I mean, obviously, and this kind of was stupid, but people were taking the Chiesa, like, air choking Allegri as like, see, he's frustrated. I'm like, no, the dude was celebrating. Allegri slapped him in the back of the head.
Dude, that was so funny.
I know, like, Chiesa grabs and just like, come here, you.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
So like, he does that, and everyone's like, look at this, Chiesa with Allegri, or like, how I feel about Juve right now. I'm like, good Lord, man. I just like, maybe it's social media, but like, I remember back then in the sports days where like, okay, great, team took a nasty loss, let's see how they bounce back. Like, guys, chill. Like, everyone was sitting here telling us same old Juve against Bologna, and then we smacked Lazio. Like, relax. This was one of those games where fundamentally, like, it was, I would say, more so individualistic errors that led to this terrible game, right? There are some things that, you know, I criticize Allegri for, but at the same time, Allegri kind of did something I didn't expect. He took out Kostic and he took out Moretti at halftime and was like, okay, I realize I need to do something different here. I'm going to do it. At this point, I'm really questioning the squads. Again, I hate picking on him, but like, I'm really questioning this. Their thoughts on Kostic and what he brings. Either he does something in training that we don't see, that's you know, edging out Illing or Cambiasso, or either that or Cambiasso still on the train playing EAFC 24 because it is out right now for Ultimate Team people. But
gotta buy it.
Yeah, so like I don't know the process of that. I think that's like my biggest question mark. But like, McKennie's been a nice surprise on the right wing back role. I think McKennie's been fantastic. You know, it was a shame that no one really converted his chances in the first half. Like, it was that's my biggest thing was like, everyone criticizes McKennie. He can't dribble. He can't beat a guy, has no technique. He took Vigna and absolutely turned him around multiple times and forced him to essentially score in his own net. So it's like, I don't know what people are up in arms against McKennie. Gatsi didn't do quite well against Lariente. Lariente was able to kind of have his way with him, but he did buy Gatsi a nice dinner before he did that. So, you know.
Look, Lariente is a good player.
He is.
Real. He's probably their best performer this year outside of Berardi. And I don't even think Berardi's doing that. And Piedemonte. But Lariente is a good player. Like, and obviously, I think Gatsi had really, truly just like an awful day at the office. Like, I really hope. And I did like what I saw when Blahovic kind of like put his arm around him. You know, and we saw those pictures of him like taking him out of the tunnel. Like, dude, take him out, get him, buy him a something, and just tell him to shake it off, and you get back to ready for Tuesday. Because, like, that's for, as bad as a game this was, like, that's what you got to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Rest on this, or it's going to eat you. Because everybody has, like, a howler of a game. It happens. Yeah. We're human. We are perfect beings.
Exactly. And speaking of a howler as well, Dusan with kind of a howler on his end, like that was that was atrocious on his end. Zero shots accuracy, takes three shots the whole game, one dribble, only one successful dribble, one block shot, 29 touches, one offside, dispossessed three times. Not really. This was
not his day. It really wasn't. As soon as I saw him shank that ball off his left foot and he just misfired it. I don't know if he looked almost anxious. Like he was like, he finally got himself in a position he wanted to be on and just was trying to kill the ball and just missed.
My issue with Dusan is it's just, again, he's 23 years old. He's still lacking the maturity of an experienced striker. Cause like from what I've seen is I see that he's way too damn focused on receiving the ball instead of being in the right position. Cause like, you know, one of those things where like, I like to coach players where I tell players where it's like, guys, stop focusing on the damn ball so much and focus on where you need to be. So it's like, Zachy, I think you muted yourself. Try again.
How about
you had it and then like you went away for a minute. Still nothing.
Hold on.
Wait, now you're good. Wait, just say something again.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I think this XLR I got is pretty bad. I just gotta change it out.
I gotcha. Yeah, because it was like it was there and then like you got fuzzy for a minute and then you like went gone completely and I'm like, no, Zach left me. Scared.
Right, yeah. Oh my god. Anyway, as you were saying, you are an adult.
So the thing with Dusan where I get really frustrated with him is, yes, he's on four goals this season, right? Two came from Lazio. You had the one against Udinese and then you had the one against Bologna. So like, yeah, he's doing well, right? My issue is there's still that immaturity gap in his head where he's got to relax, man. So like, for example, the action leading up to that shot, I think you and I are going to be talking about the same shot here where he shanks it with his left and sends it completely wide.
Right.
So if you watch the replay and the buildup to that play, he's running and he's not even looking whether or not he's onside or offside. He's looking at Chiesa, putting his hands down, telling Chiesa to feed him the ball while he's in between two center backs. And Chiesa looks at him and defers and goes to Rabiot instead. And then Dusan loses track of himself again because he's looking at Rabiot trying to get Rabiot to force him a pass. Right. So, like, Dusan to me is that really annoying guy that you play pickup with that, like, the second we have the ball, here, 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 here. Do you know where you are? I'm open. I got it. Pass it. And then, like, the thing is, and like I said this in our post-game recap, I'm like, Dusan can't whine and cry for the ball like that and then shank it. Because then you just look like a jackass, in all honesty. Like we got to call it. Like, I said it the last time we spoke, I spoke on stream. I said, hey, those goals against Lazio, phenomenal. Right-footed shots, impressive, great. Thank you for proving me wrong on that aspect of it. But then you go around and you do a stinker like this?
Yeah, man.
Like, I'm sorry, but like, here's my issue with that shank too. If you look at his positioning, If he switches to his right foot, that's in.
Yeah,
that's in because yeah. he's near post. He's near post, and right. he aims for a far post with his left foot.
Right.
That is, he is trying to force a, and that's my issue where like I have with him is he doesn't know how to relax. He's always on edge. There isn't like a minute where he's calm, composed, understands what he needs to do. Haaland is calm and composed. Mbappe knows what he needs to do. Robert Lewandowski, the same. The thing is, and this is the thing that's going to be holding Dusan back because, you know, he's a hothead. He is. Honestly, he's a hothead. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Gatsi
as
well.
He's an intense guy. Yeah.
He's a very intense guy. Both of them are. But their Achilles heel is that their intensity clouds their judgment. And for him, that is one of the biggest criticisms I've had for his game, where he just needs to relax, needs to stop focusing on getting the ball, needs to stop focusing on that. Be in position. Mm. Understand where the game is flowing, where you need to go. Because like the thing is everyone was telling me about, and we'll answer this question about the substitution, but like, one of the things that I found interesting was when everyone's like, oh, well, you know, why did we sub off Dusan? Because that throws off Chiesa and Dusan's chemistry. You realize that Chiesa's goal didn't come with Chiesa's goals this season outside of one haven't come from Dusan. A lot of his goals outside of it. There is no chemistry there, in my opinion. I don't think like there is like playing off of each other, but like they're not dependent on each other to score.
No.
So my issue with it is like, Chiesa looked at him point blank in the face and deferred to pass him the ball. That kind of shows you where Chiesa's mindset is when it comes to Dusan. Where Chiesa's like, okay, this guy doesn't have the chance to score. I don't see him as, you know, the pristine option. So he plays it to Rabiot, which, and I don't know. And my thing is, and this is the one thing I saw with Ronaldo that I always got irritated is because like, he was so vocal that everyone just decided to play for him and give him the ball instead of looking for the better option. Because if you look at that same exact action, if Rabiot was able to take a half a touch and put his head on a swivel like a true midfielder should, he would have seen Timmy Weah wide open on the right. And Weah would right. have literally just walked it in at that point. Mm-hmm. But again, he forces it to Dusan because Dusan's doing the ridiculous hand motions. And while Dusan's doing the hand motions, he doesn't, because he's watching the ball more than he's watching the play around him. Dusan got caught in an offside trap.
Right.
So even if Dusan scored that opportunity, it's offside. So for me, looking at this from a managerial or a coaching perspective, I would pull him out right then and there.
Sure.
Like, and that's kind of what happened, right? So
yeah, it was pretty closely after, right after that, closely after that, I would think.
Because that to me is saying that he's not in, like mentally, he's not there. He's off and he's forcing it, which doesn't help you. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause like, for example, Chiesa was more, and the thing is, and this is where I give Chiesa a lot of credit, that entire game outside of the celebration, Chiesa was composed. Like, yeah, he was running, you know, intense and whatnot, but like Chiesa was like, okay, let me look here. Let me do this. Let me adjust here. Like Chiesa to me is a playmaker. He's that guy that, you know, you can put the team on your back for 15, 20 minutes to get a game winner or an equalizer in which he did
right.
Temporarily. Dusan to me, isn't that guy. He isn't there yet. Where like, for example, you look at Robert Lewandowski, sat there and said, fuck it. I'm going to take Poland as far as I can. Like that's the one thing like that Dusan needs to work on. And we'll get into this question, this listener question. So Dusan, who is on 4 goals this season, was replaced in the 75th minute. Simply because he wasn't having a good game. Have strikers had bad games and scored late goals? And the worst part is he was replaced by Keenan Milik. So I think this question isn't fair to Keenan Milik, especially Keane more so, because the Chiesa goal wouldn't have happened without Keane. So here's the thing that I respect about Moise Keane and Milik themselves is their off the ball movement, their ability to anticipate space. So if you watch the film of the Chiesa goal, what happens before that play is you have Illing and Keane right next to each other. So what they do, as any intelligent forward would do, go to post. So the ball's coming in through a cross. So Keane goes into the far, to the near post, near side of the ball. Illing goes to the far post. What happens is that they take 2 to 3 center backs with them because they're occupying and, again, they're creating that space. So what Chiesa does, and this is big credits to Chiesa's football IQ, Chiesa hangs back. And then there's a nice little pocket of space in between all those players, Chiesa and the goal, right? Sure. So then the ball and the ball comes in wide, and then it gets played. I want to say it's by Rabiot that plays it to Chiesa, and then Chiesa hits it one time. So the thing is what irritates me with Dusan, and that was, in my opinion, I thought that was a great substitution to bring in Keane for Dusan, because Keane stretched their back line more than Dusan did. Keane gave them, okay, we need to follow him to the near post, and that opened up a pocket of space. So look, the thing is like, I understand this question. He's like, so this question is simply because he wasn't having a good game. You need to do a change of pace. Coaches do that, right? Sometimes you need to adjust. You need to substitute. The only players that I have not seen subbed is Ronaldo and Messi, but obviously those two speak for themselves, right?
Right.
Like it's just how it is. Dusan to me hasn't proven to be clutch yet. I don't think he's had any moments where he's come in with a late equalizer at the end of the game. It's just not his MO. Like he's not that scrappy cheese goal guy where Moise Keane is. Yeah. And I think like, for example, the claim is a little bit disingenuous to Keane, because if you look at our win streak last season, our 8-game win streak, undefeated run, whatever you want to call it, you want to know who scored all the game-winning goals in our ugly wins? Out of all of them,
it was Moise Keane, usually.
It was Moise Keane, and then Milik had two.
Right.
So like those guys have scored late. Like those two have a proven track record of scoring late. Dusan got two against Lazio, one against Bologna, one against Udinese. Should have had, again, she shanked a penalty against Empoli, which if you're a clutch striker, you don't shoot a penalty like that. And I talked about it on one of our shows with the positioning of the ball. Dusan, in my opinion, is not mature enough to get those extra 15 minutes to get that last minute goal. And the thing is like, if he stayed on, nothing would have changed. Nothing would have happened. He was poor the entire game. Yeah, you might roll the dice and hit the lottery one time and get something out of it. But overall, he isn't that guy. He hasn't been that guy for us where he comes in and gets a last minute equalizer. You can say, like, for example, the header against Bologna, but that was what, in the 75th, 74th minute, I believe. 75th. I don't think it was in the 80s. Yeah, I don't think it was in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is like Allegri said, okay, he is stifled. He is not in it. Because you guys got to remember, too, it's different from what we're seeing on the TV than what we're seeing on the pitch and also in the locker room as well. Because again, Dusan is very emotional. He is phenomenal when he's in it, in his headspace, but he is god awful when he's not in it. And that's my issue with him. And all you need to be successful is a 7 striker, right? Like a 7, like Danilo, like how Danilo is a 7 center back. Mm-hmm. You don't get a howler, you don't get a world-class game, you get something that's consistent. Dusan is a 3 and a 10.
Ooh, a 3 is maybe a little low. I've never seen him put a 3 performance in.
It might be, but like the idea is it's just polar opposites.
Right.
Like there hasn't been, like, for example, there hasn't been a game where I'm like, he's been all right. Like there's games where it's like, holy shit, he's good. And then there's games like this where I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Right.
So like the thing is, and he was replaced by Milik and Keane. Like what do you have backups for? if that's the mindset that you want to ask that question, right? Because it's like, what is a backup player in that position? It's called a change of pace player.
Yep.
Every sport has that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead, Zach.
You're right. It wasn't working, obviously. It wasn't Vlahovic's day. You pull him off and you try and make something happen with somebody else. And there was some positives that came with putting Keane in and then, you know, Milik. But then again, at that point, again, it just wasn't our day. Like we made mistakes and we did stupid things that resulted in goals that probably should not have been scored. But, you know, it's not just on Vlahovic, but Vlahovic did not have a good game. He's not immune to not having a good game. And obviously we know that, you know, his consistency is what we're looking for. And he is an emotional guy. And this is what I think is going to come down to man management, essentially. How does Allegri man manage that? Or maybe Allegri doesn't. Maybe Allegri gives it to one of his staff.
works better with Dusan, and that's the man manager you need working with him. Because, yeah, maybe, and you know, maybe Vlahovic is a, you know, is a later bloomer. You know, like, I mean, guys like, I mean, he's 20. Yeah, okay, so he's 22, 23 years old, whatever he is. Okay, so maybe he's not crushing goals in, like, a Haaland is right now, but maybe he could be. I mean, that's like, I mean, there are guys like, you know, Jamie Vardy, for example, who like really didn't become effective until they were like 27, 28. And then all of a sudden they turned into world beaters. And it was like, what? How'd this happen?
Yeah.
And that might just be who Vlahovic is. And, or it could just be, you know, he just needs the right man management. This wasn't his day. And you could tell he was frustrated. He wasn't aware, like you said, he wasn't in the situation of the game. He wasn't reading the situation of the game well. This is one of those days. I'm sure part of it was just the frustration of being just that. Again, it was just that type of game.
It was. And
I, Allegri was right to pull him off. He should have pulled him off. Because I'm not gonna knock Allegri for that.
Yeah, and I'm not either, because like the thing is like, one, as a coach, you have other players that are watching you, and like, what the hell, man? Like, yeah, I would get pulled off. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm getting pulled off if I do like half the shit that he's pulling. Because you, again, like I said, guys, we have to look at it outside of what we see it on TV. We need to look at it from, like you said, a man management, a game standpoint, a mental standpoint, all of it. Because if I'm Allegri, and I have, so like, for example, I have Keane, I have Milik, I have Fagioli, I have Yildiz, I have all these players on the bench, and they're watching Dusan absolutely shit himself on the field, and they're like, what the hell? I barely get minutes as is, and this guy's getting a full 90 in a clutch time game, and he's pulling this shit? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That causes disruption in the locker room, whether you like it or not. They're all professionals. They all want to be on the field. They all want to look good, because again, some of these guys are going to be playing for contracts. Some of these guys need that bag. It's not like, you know, Juve's a retirement center for these guys. Like, for example, Keane's like, hey, I need to get some minutes and get some goals, or my career is screwed, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's hungry. I think you could tell he's hungry.
Yeah. So like, you guys got to understand that standpoint. And to me, that also holds Dusan accountable as well when you're being subbed off in the 75th minute, because, hey, you're not playing good. Next guy up. Like, that's what a lot of successful coaches do. That's what Pep Guardiola does.
Yep.
Pep Guardiola, hey, sorry, bud, you're replaceable. Next man up. Unless right now, if you're Haaland, that's the only position I don't think he can. But even then, with Luis Diaz and all those guys, I think he's getting to that point where he can do something like that. But
Luis Diaz is Liverpool.
Is it, who's the other one?
Ruben Diaz. Ruben Diaz.
No. They have like that Argentinian striker that they signed.
Alvarez.
Alvarez. Julian Alvarez. There we go.
Yeah.
Wow. L on my part.
Nah, you're all right. You're all right.
So like that's one of those things where a good franchise or a good team has that philosophy. Next man up. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, Dusan's on 4 goals this season. Okay, great. But if you're playing like shit, you're playing like shit. Because, like, that, you know, it's the same argument where it's like you can't use something that's not in the moment. Like, a lot of people will say that, and like, you got to be able to look at it from a balls and strikes perspective. Right. So I don't disagree with the substitution. I think he needed it. Technically, it worked in a sense because you got an equalizer right after. However, unfortunately, your goalkeeper kind of negated that, and then the game was pretty much done and dusted. Right. But he changed it. He did it to change pace. It did. Got an equalizer.
Right.
Job done, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. Agreed. And again, I think it just comes down to the fact that, like, this was just a really, really bad game for us. And again, when we were talking about champ and chump, I think Chiesa is absolutely the champ because he wanted to grab the game by the scruff of the neck as best he could. He looked sharp in basically everything he did. Again, it seemed like everybody else was just off a step relative to what he was doing. And then, oh, man. And again, I just think the chump has to be Tech. Tech, the 3 of those goals should not necessarily have happened. Exactly. And they're directly on him. It is what it is, but like, we got to move forward now. Like, it's just a matter of like, what's our character? Like, this is like, when we talk about like a Vlahovic or a Tech or whatever, whoever was in that game who had a bad game, Like, that's where, hell shit, even if he didn't have that bad of a game, that's where you got to like go. You got to look yourself like dead in the mirror and you got to be like, fucked up. That was bad. Yeah. That was unacceptable. I was not good enough. But you know what? Got to do better next time. Not, you know, I'm shitty and what the fuck and, you know, wallow in your defeat. No, you say, damn, we fucked up. We ate that. All right. Time to go to the next one because we cannot slack against this Lecce side.
Absolutely not, which is a perfect segue. Thank you, my guy. So we are playing. What I like to call. I always call these guys milk, just because Lecce is, you know, milk in a lot of languages. So I always like calling these guys this. But this is going to be interesting because Lecce are the elephant of Serie A, or the elephant in a tree in Serie A. Because they, you look up in the tree and you see a fucking elephant there, and you're like, how the fuck did they get there?
No, right.
They're there.
Right.
So last season it was Udinese, right? At the early stages, they were like
in the early stages of the game. Yeah, the season. Yeah.
Yep. So now we have Lecce. So, Zachy, you got anything you want to talk about Lecce first?
I mean, honestly, when just by looking at their goal differential, they've done really well not to concede. And again, okay, so they beat Genoa. Now they drew with Monza away. So maybe their away form isn't as sharp as their home form, but at home, I mean, they've been beating everybody. Now, again, they had Genoa, they had Salernitana, and they had Lazio. But that's the thing, is that they're getting the points where they know they have to get them. Okay? So, like, this is not a team to sleep on, because they're scoring when they have to, and they're getting the results when they have to. And they drew 2-2 against you know, Fiorentina. And that's no easy feat either, you know? So just based on what I'm seeing, they obviously have an idea and about what they want to accomplish. I think I'm going to be completely honest. I haven't watched too much of them. But just based on numbers, based on what I'm seeing, based on, you know, their statistics that I've read, that looks like they have a clear identity and they know what they want to do. And we're going to have to handle that at home. Like, we cannot let up off the gas for a second.
100%. And I agree with you there, Zachy. The thing with these guys, I believe they have double digit. Yeah. So hold on. So they're about 8 goals to the season right now.
Right.
This team is spam attack almost in a sense, right? They are just absolutely throwing in attacks right now. Overall, they're 6th in the FOTMOB rating as far as team form, but goals, they're 1.6 goals per match, so that's top 8. Goals conceded, they have the 2nd best defense in the league. It is tied with Bologna as the 2nd best at a 0.8 goals conceded per match. Right. Possession wise, these guys don't like to carry possession at all. They don't really care for it that much. It's 45.7%. Clean sheets, they have 2, which is 4th in the league right now. Expected goals, their XG, that this is their cumulative, which is 5.3. They have scored 8. So that means they're currently outperforming their expected goals this season. Mm-hmm. Shots on target. So this is actual shots being saved by the goalkeeper, 4.2. That's 11th place, so mid-table. Big chances created, 5. Big chances missed, 4. So these guys essentially are an overperforming mid-table team right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's the thing where you got to be careful with these Flyers, right? So right now, they are the best home team compared to Inter right now, but record-wise, they are the 2nd best team in the league at home. Right now, as long as it's not raining, we'll be good. But
oh boy.
As long as it's not raining. However, though, these guys are not a walk in the park. They might be a walk in the park after a couple of months, after, you know, their form peters out and whatnot, but they're running a very, because the thing is what I find interesting about these provincial clubs or provinces and whatnot is they usually run a back 5 and et cetera. No, Lecce is coming at you with a 4-3-3. So I never really see it. Like, I mean, the only, and air quotes, I don't mean this in a term of disrespect, but Fiorentina is kind of like one of those lower teams that run the 4-3-3. Again, they're not a lower team, but if you were to look and compare them between, you know, your top 4, maybe 5, they're a little bit beyond it, unless this season, if Lazio's just been absolutely atrocious. But
yeah, really yeah. bad.
Sorry. Sorry, he's lost his balls. There's no sorry ball. so
yeah, fuck.
All right. You know, it's like IFTV, what's his face? Antonio says he's like, what is a Saudi's balls?
Yeah, right.
What is a Saudi's balls? He's like, what is a Saudi ball? You know, this guy is a flop. He comes in, everybody think he's the greatest coach ever, but I keep asking, where is the Saudi's balls? Because like sorry ball was like the biggest trending thing ever, and I found it funny when he was commenting that season about it. When
Saudi balls, yeah,
yeah, yeah, when sorry was at UVA.
Saudi's balls.
He had an emphasis on the ball. Like yeah. he's like, what is this Saudi ball? It was just so funny.
Should have said cazzo di Sarri.
Oh man, yeah, I wish Sam could do that impersonation. Sam would be fucking hilarious for it. Yeah. But right now, though, their coach Roberto Di Aversa, he is 48 years old. He's an Italian coach. He was at Sampdoria from July of 2021 to January of 2022, so he left midseason. But outside of that, he's been so it's interesting, right? So this coach has been nowhere more than a year or year and a half. So I like to see that this guy is a tinkerman. Right. So he comes in, just adjusts things, and then leaves. Because if you look at it, he was at his longest stint was Parma Calcio from December 2016 to August of 2020. Mm. And then after his time at Parma, he went back to Parma. He took a sabbatical in a sense, came back January 2021, left May 2021. So that's when they got relegated. And then went to Sampdoria from July to January, and then was unemployed from January of 2022 until July of 2023. So he took a 1.5 year sabbatical, and it looks like it's doing wonders for him, right? Beat Genoa. He tied Monza. He beat Ochoa and Salernitana. Tied Italiano ball, and then neutered Sadi's balls. So.
I haven't watched, and that's just because, you know, I've just been pulled all over the place, just from all sorts of things and stuff. And to be honest, when I initially see Lecce on the schedule, I don't make the tally there, and I absolutely have to watch this game, you know, on my calendar. No disrespect to them, but you know, I got a lot of other things I'm trying to do and watch and see, but. Yeah, it looks like they really won't wait. They're not afraid to cede possession, even if that, you know, and go forward. Like as soon as they get it, they go for it. You know, they're not trying to play out clock and then hope to get you on a counter or you know, and just sit back and wait to absorb pressure. No, they're very much going forward. I don't know what he plays like, but that kind of reminds me of just from the way, you know, describing it like that kind of reminds me of like Ange Postecoglou's team. Like he was Celtic last year and the year before that. Now he's at Tottenham, where he basically explains like, yo, don't be afraid to like lose the ball trying to make something happen. It's okay. We'll get it back. Like if you lose the ball going forward, we'll get it back. Like just try and score because you're not going to go anywhere just sitting on the ball. And so maybe there's a little bit of that type of mentality in here. I'll be really interested to see how they do just from a footballing perspective.
Yeah. And they employ a high pressing. They're doing a high pressing style, right? That's usually a lot of those lower end teams that have that shock of the first half of the season are the ones that do the press. Cause like Udinese was doing like a ridiculous press the beginning of the season last season. And then it kind of just petered out towards the end. So I really think that's what Lecce is doing. It's more so kind of like an Italian gig in press, right? Where they just kind of come in and just force, cause they don't have an extended spell of possession. Low possession. So that means one, it's a press. So what they do is they press you, force a mistake, 1-2 passes, bada bing, bada boom. And it is a goal in a sense.
Right. And they've been from the way it looks, they've been clinical enough to have 10 points or 11 points and be ahead of us in the table. So Credit to him. Again, this is not a game where we can rest on our laurels. We have to come out strong. We have to have an idea and identity of how we want to play. Like Allegri's got to like be like, all right, was that enough of a learning lesson for you guys this year? Because like we can't be coming out and performing like that.
Yeah,
if we want to do anything, and the guys got to know it too.
Yeah, and that's what they said on the reports. They said Allegri literally brought everyone in Monday and said, "Hey, we're watching film, and I'm going to call out all of your bullshit on your film."
Good.
Which is what you need to do on that one. So, go ahead, Zach.
Oh no, I was just looking at. They were looking at a predicted lineup. So looking like he's potentially going to be slotting Rugani in there.
Walgani, the man, the myth, the legend, the guy that stiff-armed Dusan Zapata. Hell yeah,
that's what it's looking like. So. Again, this is just predicted lineup. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? Fagioli subs in for Moretti, Cambiasso, Wea, Vlahovic, and Milik. No Chiesa.
I doubt that.
I doubt that significantly.
Drastically.
Yes. But I couldn't imagine why. Like, if they're going to press us high, shit. I mean, if you're asking me, let Chiesa work his magic and smoke him. Like,
yeah.
That's what I'm thinking, but hey, what the fuck do I know? I'm just a guy.
He's like, I'm just a guy. I just do the commentating. I just say the jokes. I don't really say anything else.
I don't fucking know nothing. But hey, I'm excited, honestly, to watch it. To be quite honest, because I'm really curious about this Lecce side. I'll be curious to see how we take a good stiff one on the chin and get up and dust ourselves off.
Exactly.
It's going to tell me a lot about the character of our team. So,
yeah, and we're excited to see it. And we'll probably film another podcast recapping that game as well. But we do have to cut it a little bit short because Zach and I are on double duty. As we're recording this, we're also doing a live show later. So give us a couple minutes of break. And plus, I got to film something really quick with Dave. But anyways, guys, thanks for tuning in. And as your favorite Habibi says, check in on your friends, be kind, and stay hydrated. And Forza Juve.
Fino alla fine. Forza Juve. Let's go.
226 out.
Fa esplodere lo Juventus.